This is Tim Doyle, lead pastor of Restoration Church. Welcome to our weekly podcast featuring encouraging messages from our Sunday morning get-togethers in historic downtown St. Joseph. For more info, visit restorationstj.com.
Really glad to have you here. We call it Man Day, not Father's Day, because we value and honor and esteem every dude in the house, because not every guy gets the privilege of being a father, but we value equally the contribution our guys make. Are you in agreement with that this morning? Yeah. Yeah. So we're super glad you're here. If you're new, I'm Tim, the lead pastor here. Love to meet you and shake your hand. I'll be over there in that corner with some lovely parting gifts, but for the guys today, a special gift for the first-time men. We're talking Jack Link's beef steak today. All right, so you can pick the beef out of your teeth like a real man today. Love to meet you and say hey to you. We have a tradition here on Mother's and Father's Day in that we don't just honor those that have children, but we honor the gift that the ladies are to our body. And today, as Father's Day, of course, is here, we're honoring the guys. And you know, I hope, ladies, you'll give me the indulgence to speak to the men today. Of course, what I have to share, Mama Hall, good to see you. What I have to share is also going to be equally, you know, important, I think, to you. But my heart really is for the men today. So if you'll just give me that indulgence, and you can listen in and take away what God shares with you, too. But it really isn't hard for me to preach at all on Father's Day. In fact, I would say this is probably my life message. And the one thing over my 30 years of ministry that has probably been the prominent kind of leading edge of what I've shared with people all over the world. I mean, literally, it's crazy for me to think that this idea of helping men become better husbands and fathers and brothers and sons is what I've been privileged to have the platform to share, not only, you know, here in our church, but also around the globe. Produced the number one program listening by families around the world. 30 million people every day heard my work through Focus on the Family. Had a chance to work in the Middle East in radio, and a third of the world heard what I did live every day. Ministered in the former Soviet Union, in Northern Ireland, and of course recently in the Dominican Republic. And the team who was there would be able to vouch for me that my message that night to the 1,000 people gathered on the streets of San Cristobal was, God's a good father. And even though we didn't have it perfect for us, you know, on earth, don't lay that on God. He's the only perfect father that there is. And that message has been so healing. I mean, I've taken it to prisons, and I've seen these tough guys that I thought I wouldn't have any chance to really break through a hard shell. I just watched them begin to open up as I talked about, you know, God being a good father and them being a father to their own kids. And they knew how much they had messed up, and their heart was to do it better than it was done for them. And this message is so powerful. And I guess the thing I find most ironic is that God would put that as a primary message of mine, being a guy that didn't have a father growing up. And you guys who know me well know my story, but just briefly to let you know that, you know, until age 5, I was raised by a single mom. And then when I was 5, she married a guy that was alcoholic and abusive and had been in and out of jail much of his life, as my mom had been. And, you know, life was pretty hard. Raised in a home where never once being heard the words, I love you, from a father figure, from a male influence. Basically, you know, anger and alcohol being the daily routine. And in that alcoholism state, abuse was a regular part of my growing up, being told I was worthless, would never amount to anything. And, you know, so think about that. It gives you a brain cramp to think that that kid growing up in that environment would then go on to produce the world's most listened to radio program for fathers. It's like, what? How does that happen? Well, there's only one reason. It's by the grace of God, right? I mean, it's so crazy that a Japanese film crew flew all the way from Japan to Colorado Springs to follow me and my family around for a day to document, how does this happen? How does a kid go from being beaten, which was a real foreign concept in Japan, to the ministry that I have today? And that story aired on national Japanese television. It's just like, what? You know, guy from Wathena? How does that work? And I just think it's no accident that God today has put me in a position of leadership in a local church. And that tells me that this church is probably going to have an influence with the men of our community. That's my heart's desire. And today I just want to share with you a little bit of that passion of mine. You know, Father's Day typically is a day when churches are not as full as they are on Mother's Day. You know, usually there's a lot of emphasis on Mom's Day and not a lot on Father's Day. In fact, in the DR, Father's Day is known as the Day of the Dog. That's how they value men in that culture. So for me, it's like I don't want my Father's Day message to be a beat-up dad's day. I mean, we could quote statistics all day long about how important it is and what happens when a man is absent from the home, leading his family, and it's all true. But here's the thing. I think as men, we kind of know that our job is important, but maybe the society and oftentimes even the church doesn't value and emphasize that. Today, I want to share with you just how important I think those issues are. Psalm 68, verse 5, describes God as a father to the fatherless. And, you know, I believe we live in a time when that is a strong issue in our families. Never before have we seen such a crisis of fatherlessness in our nation. And I'm sure the majority of people in this room did not grow up in the perfect situation. In fact, I know no one did, because there are no perfect fathers. There's only one. But to whatever degree you had or didn't have that influence in your life growing up, it does impact you. I tell people this, for me, it's like this scar I have on my wrist. It wasn't intentional. I was sledding, and there was a piece of tin, and it won the battle. So I cut my wrist on a piece of tin, and years later, it's healed, but there's still a tenderness there in that area of my wrist, right? So you can have wounds from your past. Fatherlessness is one of those areas of wounding. When you're raised and told and taught that you're worthless and would never amount to anything and used to that kind of conditioning from the one who's supposed to give you your identity and your self-worth, then you can't help but be affected by that. However, wounds are supposed to be healed eventually. And even though your wound might be healed, there's a sensitivity there. That's, I think, where my ministry comes from. The scripture says, we comfort others with the comfort that we have received. When I see people walking around wounded and bleeding to death, I know this. They need healing. And oftentimes, society's own reaction to the wound, to the hurt, to the pain, is an attempt to stop the bleeding and to receive fulfillment in an area that they're aching and longing for. How ironic is it that on Father's Day weekend, as we are celebrating this value of fatherhood, we have a celebration in our city that also celebrates something different, celebrates, you know, the fact that our society is rejecting biblical role models, biblical ideas for what godly manhood and godly womanhood represent. And I just want to say from the top, that the people of the Gay Pride Festival are not my enemies. And I would just as soon have been out there handing out bottles of water on a hot Saturday morning as I would have been carrying placards saying, God hates fags. That is not my message. In fact, I understand the woundedness that draws people to try to fill a void in various ways. Sometimes it's through alcohol. Sometimes it's through accumulating stuff, right? And being powerful, abusing people. Sometimes we're very creative in a variety of ways of how to fill that void. But I'll tell you what kind of tipped me over the edge here recently was the reality that a couple of my close friends really crashed and burned in a hard way. And these are men that I love, men that love Jesus. And it did not sit well with me. When I see men who I know are good men in their heart, but they're so wounded and unable to get healing that it drives them to do things that are destructive to their families. In fact, one of the guys, you know, abandoned not only his family, but abandoned his faith. Even today, I just read his blog post, Why I Don't Believe in the God of the Bible Anymore. I'm like, seriously, man, you know, I mean, on Father's Day, we have to be that bold about it. You know, it just tells me the woundedness, and I was so frustrated. You know, I've worked with a lot of good men over the years in different organizations and Promise Keepers and Focus on the Family and Great Dads, and Men in the Mirror is one of the organizations that I taught and facilitated for in the years when Chris and I were doing missions work. And So I called my buddy, Brett Klemmer, who's the vice president, and I said, Brett, man, I just need to throw up on somebody. You know, I need to bare my heart today. And he said, I know what you're saying. And what's frustrating for men's leaders is we've seen the problem. We've known about it for decades. In fact, Promise Keepers was kind of the beginning. You know, the first time in my lifetime I saw a ministry devoted to reaching men. How many of you guys know what Promise Keepers is? I mean, I know it's been a couple of decades ago, so you know, younger guys don't even know what we're talking about. But basically, we saw stadiums full of men. I mean, like 60, 80,000. Imagine Arrowhead filled with men. It happened twice. That's how hungry guys were. They'd bring in, you know, well-known speakers and awesome music, and they'd get the guys all pumped up. Well, the problem was they left guys from those stadiums all feeling really good, but there was no local support from the churches to continue that work on. I think it was the fault of Promise Keepers, not of the local church. Here's what I believe. The church is the established institution on the planet to affect the culture. Jesus said, on this rock I will build my Promise Keepers, right? No. What did he say? On this rock I will build my church. See, the church is the plan A, God's means to impact the planet. And beyond that, these parachurch, these other organizations are great helpers. My job at Focus on the Family was wonderful. 30 million people every day heard my work. But the point of that was to build up the local church. If it doesn't, it really doesn't have a purpose in the kingdom. It's kind of seeking its own kingdom. And that is not something God's obligated to bless. And because great organizations didn't connect to the local church, that movement of men really fizzled and died. So despite the great tools and the resources, it just didn't meet the need. And we continue today to see men leaving the church in droves. I'll be honest with you, one of the things I love about Restoration is we've got some good men. Look around you. We've got some awesome guys. You know, I'm looking at them right now, and you guys are probably the best encouragement that I have. Because I see you and I think, something's going on. Why would a man be drawn here and stay unless he felt something was connecting and meeting a need? We still have a long way to go, but I think we're on a good start. So I was talking to my friend about, you know, why are churches failing to connect to these guys? And yes, those men also have responsibilities and choices. I just want to put men in the best atmosphere, the best environment to make the best choices, because none of us are immune. Could happen to any one of us in this room. We could make a devastating choice tomorrow and lose it all. And I don't want that for my men. And he and I began to just kind of commiserate about that. And his deduction was this. He said, I think that men just are not spending the time together necessary to build relationships that then draws them deeper into their walk with Christ. And I really felt like he hit on something. Here's what we know statistically, that if you reach a man, 90% of the time, that man's family will join him in church. If you reach a woman, about 23% of the time, the family will come with the woman to church. If you reach a child or a youth, it's about 16% of the time. And we've known those stats for 30 years. But the reality is churches aren't doing a very good job of reaching men, even though reaching a man is the most effective way to bring people into the church. Why is it so difficult? Well, Jack Hayford, Pastor Jack Hayford, one of my mentors who I've never met, right? But I admire him so much. He said years ago that ministry to men is the most difficult of any ministry in the local church to establish and to maintain. And you got to wonder why. Are men just that stubborn, hard-headed? Well, maybe. But I think there's something more important at stake there. I think there's the reality that we have an enemy who also knows that if you reach a man, 90% of the time, you're going to reach his household. So look at that. You reach a guy, and you've automatically taken care of women's ministry and youth ministry and children's ministry. Instead, the church has been addressing the symptoms, right, by producing great children's and youth ministry, women's ministries, but they've neglected the core. In the Dominican Republic, I love what they do, but up until three, 4 years ago when Chris and I started going down, I said, have you ever done anything for the guys? And they kind of looked at me and scratched their heads and said, no. We've done stuff for the orphans that the guys create, right? And the women who are left to hold the bag for what the guys do. But we've never targeted the guys. And see, it's just kind of the way I think. It's the glasses I've been given to look through. So I said, well, why don't we try that? And our first trip down there, I'll never forget it. We were doing the fathering seminar that I did for 8 years when Chris and I were missionaries. And we were sitting on the grounds of the orphanage, and the little girls from the orphanage were leaning out the windows of the second floor, listening to everything we said, and singing along with us in Spanish in our worship songs. And I'll tell you what, it was a spiritual moment when I literally heard these girls singing over the men, and it just broke my heart. And I realized there's something here of the heart of God that, you know, no wonder the enemy fights so hard to get men to connect, to keep them from connecting to the local church, lest they be changed and transformed and lead their families. And the problem, you know, there are ministries devoted to why churches are losing with guys, and they talk about things like environments and, you know, all the flowers and the purple carpet and, you know, the stuff that just make this sort of an alien atmosphere that men don't feel comfortable in. Well, it's kind of got me wondering, look at this building that we've been given to work out of. Pretty much a masculine context. I mean, there's dirt everywhere. Come on. I mean, what man doesn't want to come into this dirty place and get dirty, get his hands grubby? Lots of things here to fix. If men want something to fix, we got plenty of that stuff. I just wonder if God's put us in a different spot, in a different location, perhaps to do something a little different. How many churches open their worship service with Living on a Prayer? Come on now, let's be honest about that. I, for one, think is awesome, and I asked the team to do that intentionally to show you how if we're going to reach people that no one else is reaching, right now no one's really doing a good job of reaching men. So if we're going to do more effective work than what we're seeing, we're going to have to use a different model. I'm not saying that we'll necessarily open with that amazing vocal torch set from Tara Brach and the guitar squealing, screaming work of David Ross, although I wouldn't be opposed to that. I'm saying we're going to use a different model than what we see if we're going to be effective, because I want guys here. I mean, to be honest with you, I told Kristen when I married her, I said, honey, you got to know something about me. I love men. She said, I know that. And I'll take you anyway, because it's just always been a passion of mine to see guys, the switch flipped, and they become the husbands, the fathers, the sons, the brothers they were created to be. When I was in college, I came from this home, right, of how I grew up, and I landed in college, and I somehow found my way to a fraternity, like guys do, right? And there was the beer, and there was the women, but along with that was an interesting dynamic in that these guys also call themselves a Christian organization. So along with the beer and the women was a Bible. And our initiation was reading the scriptures for 2 weeks. That was it. And something clicked. Something stuck with me. And I began to attend church, and the rest is history, right? But what I saw in that fraternity context that really impressed me was how these men were building relationships with one another. Right? They were getting involved in each other's lives. And even though as I grew in my Christian faith, I wasn't maybe the number one guy on the party list to choose to go party with, right? But when there was a crisis, I'd hear a knock at my door, right? When the guy's girlfriend broke up with him, or when the guy's girlfriend was pregnant, or when mom and dad were getting a divorce, or when I realized my struggle with alcohol is more than a passing problem. And I just saw these incredible relationships, and I knew that was what was drawing the guys. It wasn't the beer or the women. That was in all the fraternities, right? There was something unique. There was a relational dynamic, and I knew that's what the men were hungry for. And I have yet to see a church that really does that well. And I think that's the core of the problem. Let me ask you this. How did Jesus start his earthly ministry? What did he do? He collected 12 guys, right? And they did life together. For 3 years, they hung out together. They ate, they slept, they worked, they sweat, they fussed, and they saw some amazing things. And those men went on to change the planet. Now, he also had some ladies, right, that came along too. But I think it's interesting to note that the core was exactly what my friend Brett and I talked about. Men aren't really doing life together, hanging out together. Cannot tell you how desperate I am to see that happen in the local church. So much so, you know, that here's this guy that, you know, for 30 years of ministry, that was my primary message. When I left Focus on the Family to be involved in the local church, that was my passion. I got in the local church and I saw how we are losing this battle. I saw pastors bailing out left and right. I saw men self-destructing. I said, we've got to do something about that. So then I invested 8 years of my life going around and teaching pastors, men's leaders, and churches how to help their guys get stronger. And then my own church implodes, right, that I was attending. And that happens to be the same church that I pastor today, the one that helped me get out of my fatherlessness and begin my journey with Christ. I just think that's no accident. And I think today the fact that God picked me for this role and brought you here tells me that together we have something to accomplish. I think it's no accident that you're here. Man, I look at the guys, of course I'm preaching to the choir because you're here. But what about the guys that aren't? Well, how are we going to reach those men? It's not going to be me. It's going to be guys that you encounter, you work with, you live next door to. These men are looking for something. And they're kind of flailing, trying to figure out what it is they're looking for. Some of them are marching downtown this weekend. Some of them are at the Royals game, right? I'm not against the Royals. Just saying, men get real creative on how they can fill that gap. And if we can figure out what bait will attract them relationally, I'll tell you what, we got the best bunch of men I could hope for to be on my team. Man, I'd choose you guys in a heartbeat. And I'm glad you're here. But I know that there's more than just us feeling good, warm fuzzies about ourselves. First of all, I want to see you growing in your relationship with God and getting stronger. But then I also know beyond that, there's others that we're to be connecting with and showing them the genuine article, not the cheap substitute that the world offers. When I, you know, if you know the rest of my story, when I was about 24, I met my biological father for the first time. He actually put an ad in the paper looking for me. And when we finally connected and I got to meet him, people were asking, like, gosh, was that a big deal, meeting your dad? I'm like, well, it was interesting. But what really was more impactful to me than meeting my father was feeling like a son to someone for the first time in my life. Having someone in my life that cared about me, where I was going, wanted to know what was important to me, how he could help me get to where I was hoping to go. Feeling like a son to someone, and it was so just, you know, world-shaking for me, even as a Christian, that actually changed my name. I wasn't raised Tim Doyle. I changed my name. And, you know, for a guy in broadcasting, your name is kind of who you are, and it's sort of your handle, right? I mean, that's what I was known by. And people asked me, and they actually kind of argued with me about it, you don't need to do that. You shouldn't do that. You're going to ruin your career. And I just said, well, you know, I don't think you understand how important it is for a young man or a young woman to finally come into their identity, to know who they are. It affected me, you know, as a person. So much so, I changed my name. I took my wife and my 3-year-old son, and we stood before a judge in Buchanan County, and we all got a name change all at once, which was kind of weird, but also kind of cool, you know. And I think the same principle holds true for us when we know who we are in Christ, when we identify with our Heavenly Father, who is the only perfect Father there is. We get a new identity. We find out who we truly are, and that's what people are hungry for. The world's offering these cheap trinkets of a substitute. Hey, you want this, you need this, this is what you're after. Anything short of a relationship with Jesus is cheap imitation leather, right? It's not the real goods. It wasn't long after I met my dad, and I began to experience this change in my heart that I gave him a gift, which was kind of nerdy, the paperweight, right? He was an office guy, and he had a desk he worked at all the time, so that he'd see that a lot. Paperweight, kind of this granite rock, but on top of that was a plaque, a bronze plaque. And I had engraved with a scripture. And the scripture is one that's become sort of a life verse for me, and it's one that I think even today I kind of build my life on. It's Malachi 4:6. I want you to look at it with me. This is the prophet Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament. We're just about ready to launch into New Testament, right? This is the last words of the Old Testament. It says, he, speaking of the spirit of Elijah, which of course represents God's heart. Let's just say God will restore the hearts of the fathers to their children
and the hearts of the children to their fathers. That's why that opening video meant so much to me. And when I saw it, I'm like, yep, that's the one. That's what we're using. That's the heart of God for this generation. We live in a fatherless generation. The scripture goes on to say, or I will come and strike the land with a curse. And can I just say to you, I think it's not too much of a stretch to say that we live in a fatherless time, and it's a curse to our generation. Fatherlessness is rampant. And even if there has been a dad in the home, oftentimes that dad was distant and disconnected because he didn't know how to connect, because his dad didn't connect with him. Lest you feel sorry for me and feel that my stepdad was an evil guy, he grew up in the exact same home he raised me in, alcoholic and abusive. You can't give away what you don't possess. So when I talk to men, I say, you've got to have your identity from one place only, so that then you can make a difference. You can draw a line in the sand. You can change the trajectory of your family, your household. And no, none of us do it perfectly. I would not qualify for that title. But I'll tell you what, I never dreamed I would ever be a happy married man, because I didn't know how to do that. I'd never seen it done well. All I saw was dysfunction. I was scared to death. Not of a woman, I was scared of me, that I wouldn't have the goods, right? So even after I met a beautiful lady who knocked my socks off, she literally sent me socks when I was on the mission field. She did. That's a whole other story. But it took me 2 years to get up the nerve even to kiss her, because to me, to kiss her meant I was committing. And I didn't know if I wanted to do that, because I didn't want to blow it. So I was just stuck. And it was the love of this woman who got me unstuck. So I am today who I am, partially because of her. Let alone be a dad. Are you kidding me? Zero confidence in that. You know, didn't even know how to do it. And today, of course, 3 amazing kids. And I get to serve in ministry with those kids, which is just like, okay, I'm living the dream now, you know. And on top of it all, an amazing church made up of men that I can literally call, because I don't have any biological brothers or sisters, you know. I have an amazing family, and I'm especially proud and love my men. And guys, you'd have to put up with me, because I love you so much, I'll grab you and kiss your face. I just will, you know, because I'm so for you. I want so much for you. I guess as an older guy now, right? I've got the dad bod and I've got the gray hair. And so I find that even the impact on the younger guys for me is interesting dynamic, because so many of these younger men didn't have dad speaking identity and life into them growing up. And it's a privilege of mine to get to do that, to put my arms around these young men and women, especially the young men. I don't grab my young women, but I grab my young men, and I speak life and destiny and just the belief in them, because that's what this generation's hungry for. And I believe if we can raise a crop of guys who are secure in who they are and know that they're a son of the Father, and that their destiny is to be a husband, a brother, a friend, a leader, a warrior, a champion for him. I'm telling you what, we can't build a church big enough to hold the people that are hungry for that. That's why my fraternity was bursting at the seams. Men were hungry for relationship and friendship. Now, they needed it with Jesus, but guess what? It begins with relationship with one another. That's why Jesus said the first commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the secret sauce. That's what will win the hearts of the people, not the protests and the ugly rants on Facebook. Please stop it. That's not helping the cause. My burning desire. You know, if you were to say to me, Tim, if all the other responsibilities of leading a church were taken care of, what would you give yourself to full-time? And I would say, this. This is exactly what I would do. And so it makes me wonder, What if we had a church where all the responsibilities, all the stuff of ministry were handled by people who had a passion and a gift for that, and we were all giving ourselves to the things that really we have passion and made us come alive. What would that look like? I'd like to find out. I really would. I think that would be an awesome church. I would be a part of that. And I'll tell you what, Restoration, we've got a really, really good start. But here's my line, right? Is the glass isn't half empty. It could be fuller, right? That's the way it works. Like, I'm not a negative guy. I don't say the glass half empty. I say the glass is half full. But it could be fuller. So I'm going to challenge you, especially men, today to shake it off, man. I should have had that song played today. You got to shake it off. You got to shake off the stuff. You know, the sitting in rows like this and listening to a lecture, that is not church. I'm glad you all come and you like it, you know. We're trying to make it so more people can like it all the time. But the ministry really happens the other 6 days of the week. When we leave our gatherings filled up and we go slop it out on people that we meet all over the place. There's a lot of awesome things happening right now. There's a lot of good things you can be involved in. One of the things I'm super pumped about is this relationship. Chad mentioned it. Our partnership with Humboldt School, right up the street from us, literally like a couple of blocks, is this elementary school. And if you think that our description of the Dominican Republic is bad, I'm telling you what, we've got some neighborhoods in St. Joe that aren't far from the crisis. They're living it. We have a church that we partner with up on, it's either 5th or Grand, I can't ever remember, but they're right across from Lindbergh. And we hear some of the stories that those kids tell, those church workers, and the things that they're dealing with in their homes. And it's just like I grew up. It's exactly like I grew up. Only there's people being shot in their neighborhoods, and, you know, mom and dad are both are in jail, and there's no food in the house, and I don't have shoes to wear, and it's just like, oh, my goodness, that's two blocks away from us. We have got to wake up from the slumber of thinking that life is all about us and turn our attention toward where we're supposed to be. Church happens out on the street. This is a fun gathering, and I love it. You know, I think it's awesome we get together like this, and I always want to do it, but this is for that. And this principal told me, she goes, Tim, you know, we welcome. We're so excited about this partnership. She said, can we put your church in our newsletter? I'm like, absolutely you can. I said, we're stepping up. And we began to talk about what we could do. And she said, yeah, school supplies, because we mentioned that. That's what we do for the Dominican kids. So we could collect school supplies for both, right? Backpacks, things like that to help them get ready for school. And she said, and just simple things like a stick of deodorant would be really, really great, you know, a toothbrush. Church, we can do that. We can go read books to the second grade class, you know? What would it be like, not only if the ladies, who you're always easy targets, I can get you to do anything, but if I had some guys go up and read some books to the second graders? How awesome would that be to see some awesome manly guys up there being uncles and brothers and papas? And I mean, I can't even tell you the impact that that can have when we endeavor to engage. That's exactly what I want to see happen. You know, today, I guess, is maybe a day for me just to share my passion with you for what I hope to see as our church grows and as we get stronger. And I believe that a key to our growth and strength will be reaching the men. Because when you reach the man, 90% of the time, you reach his family. And that seems like a pretty effective strategy to me. We want to do a couple of things practically. As I was talking to my friend Brett about this issue with guys not connecting, I realized we've been so busy planting a church that we haven't really had a lot of time to get to know each other relationally. You know, those opportunities seem few and far between. So I want to begin purposefully every month planning opportunities for, I would say, the guys, but I'm not going to be exclusive to guys. Once in a while, it'll be guys only, right? But just us to hang out together and get to know each other. One of the first ones we're going to do is a Mustangs game. It's Faith and Family Night on July the 2nd. That is a Thursday. And just so happens, one of your favorite NFL mascots is going to be there that night. Guess who? Yep. Mr. Casey Wolf, dude, Dan Mears, that you met a couple of weeks ago. Everybody seemed to kind of like Dan, right? When I found out Dan was coming, I'm like, ah, that's a no-brainer, man. We're going to do that. So Thursday, July the 2nd, tickets are $6. So it's super affordable. We'll have them at the information desk next week. It's family night, so hot dogs are a buck. How's that? You know, so affordable, and I think a fun time just to hang out together. There's another event then coming up on August the 21st and 22nd. It's our annual men's retreat, and we'll be going to the lovely vacation capital of the world. Close. That's maybe next year. Maybe next year. This year we're going to Mooresville, Missouri, near Chillicothe. Everybody go, ooh. How many of you here have been to Mooresville, Missouri, near Chillicothe, to the Jabez Retreat Center? Uh-huh. So you know what I'm talking about. Guys, listen, this is a 6,000-square-foot log lodge sitting atop a bluff overlooking 150 acres of the Platte River Valley. I'm telling you, you want to be there. It's going to be awesome. Today on your way out, we've got a gift that'll provide you some more information. You can scan the barcode and get detail and get signed up. We're committed to doing whatever we have to do to see a revival among men, not only in our church, but in our city. Let me tell you this. We had, you know, the prophet came and spoke to us a couple of years ago, and one of his words was this: your church is going to transform this city. Now, that blew me away. It's like, boy, that's a big responsibility. I don't know. And then he went on to say, and other cities will come here to see how to transform their cities. Folks, I believe God has big plans for us. Big plans. But it begins today when we get transformed. When we take this charge seriously and get off our duff and begin to engage and realize we're here for more than just me. We're here for who we're trying to reach. We're here to transform a city who's groping and desperate for identity and to know who they are and find something to fill that ache and void in their heart. And I'm just fool enough and naive enough to think that if we could start with the guys. Ladies, I hope you don't hear me saying that you aren't valuable. That, just the opposite. In fact, Bill McCartney, who started the whole Promise Keeper movement, said this years ago. He said, women will experience a crisis when the men finally take their place because they won't know how to act. They're so used to carrying their load and his too. Right? It's freedom for you ladies to know that you can count on these men to do their part. Several years ago, I was speaking at a church on Mother's Day in Denver, and guess what I talked about? Ministry to men, which the pastor was a little nervous about, because moms are kind of used to that being their day, right? And I got up and gave my stump speech to the men, and the women cried and said, thank you. Even between services, I had two ladies stop me. Thank you for loving my men the way you do, because that makes them want to be here, and this is where I want them. So I don't apologize for it. In fact, I think it's what we're supposed to do. And I think if we do what we were created to do, this thing is going to get really fun. I see a day when our room next door, we're doing multiple services there because we have to. And on days when we want to get all together, we've got to go across the street to the Civic Arena because that's the only place big enough to hold us. Civic only holds 4,000 people. There's about 150,000 in the metropolitan area around St. Joe. That's just a spit in the bucket, you know? It's going to take all of us. But I am excited about what could happen when men lead the way, become servant leaders in their homes, in their workplace, in their families, in their church. This could get really good. And I've got the right men around me right now to do it. I see it. That's what gives me courage. Men, you have no idea. Just seeing you here, to seeing you participate, to see you engage, just pours courage into my chest and makes me want to continue on. So thank you for doing that. I just want to give you a huge attaboy and just a little bit of a kick in the pants. You know, I've got my steel-toed boot, and I'm fixing to use it when I need to, but I believe we've got the right mix here of men to pull the yoke together, and I'm just excited for the men that are going to be able to be a part of that, and for the ladies who will be blessed by that, the families who will be changed. My family's changed because I made a decision that it was going to stop with the last generation. We're not going to continue the dysfunction. And by the grace of God, I get to enjoy that today in a huge part because you men hold me accountable and make me sharper. That's what my tattoo says, right? Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. I got that on Father's Day about, I was 50 years old, yeah, so 4 years ago. A lady threatened to leave the church because I was going to get it live on the platform. And so I didn't. I got it on video and showed that. And she left the church. So it just shows me I'm going to do what I'm called to do and be the man God's called me to be. And I really want to be a leader that you guys, together we can form a team to take this church's places it's destined to go. And I wouldn't and could not do it without you. I love you, man. I appreciate you. Thanks for tolerating me. You know, thanks for putting up with me. But I know this, there's a strength you bring to the whole that we're desperate for. And today, I guess the bottom line is I just wanted to encourage you on Father's Day that you're needed, that there's a place for you here, that there's work for us to do. I'm not talking about necessarily just physical work. I'm talking about work for the kingdom, expanding this vision and mission, and it begins today. Would you stand to your feet this morning? I want to get you off to your Father's Day lunch, but first I want to pray for you. Appreciate you coming out today. What's awesome for us is we've already beat the curve. We've already shown that people will come to church on Father's Day for a church that gives out beef jerky and plays Living on a Prayer. Okay, so we'll keep that up. But I want to pray for you guys today. I'm going to pray particularly for the men. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you to really get uncomfortable, super uncomfortable. And I'm going to have you leave the beautiful ladies by your side and find another man to stand next to, because I don't want any man to stand alone when I pray for you. So yes, you have to do that right now. And I won't pray until you do so. If there's any man standing alone, any man, hey, come on, get up here. Get up here. See, I didn't have a man first service. I got me a man second service.
That's no fair.
Yeah. Hey, there's more room up here.
Deal with it. Every man got a buddy? Okay, I see a man right here. Yep, yep. Come on, guys. Find a guy standing alone. I see a couple of young men standing alone. Pull them in. Pull them in. See, that's what it's about, guys. That's what it's about. Get with those guys right there. There you go. See, men, this is what I'm talking about. Because there are men coming to our church who don't know other men. And they're going to sit alone until you reach out to them. And when they begin to building relationships and know somebody cares, then they're likely to want to hang around. And as they hang around, they might want to get to know Jesus that lives in you. That's what this is about. That's how it works. Okay? So let me pray for you. Ladies, would you pray for the men as I pray for them? Jesus, I thank you so much for these brothers, Lord. Thank you for these men. God, you've created them unique. You gave them the DNA of a son of God, Lord, of a warrior, of a champion. But Lord, first, they're a son. Lord, I thank you that today these sons of yours, God, I bring them before you. And as one, Lord, I'm grateful that I get to stand by my brothers. Lord, as one who doesn't have, you know, a biological family who I can relate to, you've given me the family of God. You've given me these awesome, handsome, young, strong, stud men, broad shoulders, who love you. And yes, Lord, I hear the rain. Lord, I believe you're raining your favor on a church that recognizes and touches your heart, the things that matter to you, when we let them matter to us. God, we give you permission to mess us up, to mess up church as usual. God, get us out of our straight rows and our lecture formats and our talking heads, and let us dare to engage, God, relationally with one another. And I pray specifically for my guys. I know that it's harder for men than it is for women. Lord, that's because there's a strength there that our enemy knows. If he doesn't fight that, then we're liable to get stronger and see 90% of families come to church when their men get turned on to you, God. Lord, so we are determined to fight for that. If it means getting out of our comfort zone, out of our rows, and meeting somebody we haven't known, and give up a few things on our schedule so we can get together with these guys, then so be it. Lord, we are not satisfied any longer to live without that strength in your church that the world today is desperate for. Men, today I want you to feel that the hand of these guys on your shoulder, and it's not a man's hand that you're feeling. It's the hand of your Father, who would embrace you if he could, but because he's not here physically, he's given you men to stand with you. And his charge and his blessing over you today is the same that he gave his Son. He came up out of the waters of baptism, a step of obedience, and the Father said this, "You're my Son, chosen and marked by my love, pride of my life." Father, may these men hear those words with new ears today. May they have courage and boldness to go forward from here. God, to love their wives. Not be afraid, God, of laying down their life for fear of losing it. Because you said, the one who loses his life for my sake, that's when he'll find it. God, I look forward to the journey with my brothers. It's going to be fun to rejoice together, to walk together, to work together, to wrestle together. Lord, even to fuss at times together, because that's going to make us stronger as we choose, rather than to separate, to pull closer together, work it out. God, there are men in this city who are desperate to see what that looks like. They've never seen it, particularly in the church. God, use us, Father, to blaze new territory, to rock the boat, to get in the boat, to get out of the shallow water and launch into the deep on the adventure that you have for us. God, you're worth it. This city is worth it. Your kingdom is worth it. Thank you for men with strong and courageous hearts who will not be among those, God, who choose to stay isolated and make decisions that devastate their families. Lord, it could be any one of us. Today, God, we choose different. We choose you. We choose one another. Choose, God, to let you use us to make a difference in this world. That's what my prayer is for these brothers on Father's Day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you so much for listening today. To connect with or support the vision of this pioneering work in historic downtown St. Joseph, visit restorationstj.com, or better yet, come see us in person this Sunday at 9 and 10:45 a.m. We hope to see you soon.